All right. Should we start up?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So we've been discussing two ways of conceptualizing the Poel. One is to conceive the Poel as a subset of the property right. You guys with me or?
Okay.
One is to conceptualize the Poel as a subset of property right. The other way is to conceptualize the Poel as a contractual relationship. The core way that we've gone about evaluating this is through whether the Poel is considered gufo kanoi or lav gufo kanoi. The sense that I'm getting is that gufo kanoi is a nice proxy for a property right, and the lav gufo kanoi conceives of it as something weaker, just like some sort of binding agreement, something like that. We saw several nafkamina, several formulations in the Rishonim. We saw the Shitmar Ram about the power of the Poel to go free without a get shichur, without a kinyan. Maram argued that a Poel cannot go free with Amira alone. It was a very powerful argument from the Maram in Rutenberg. We saw the formulation of the Rambam with respect to Ona, that a Poel is a kind of an Eved, and that's why he falls under the Eved exclusion for Ona. We saw the position of the Rush in Two Chubos, where he seems to say that you can't sell somebody into schirus to pay back a debt, because that would violate the rules of nimkar bigne vaso velo bechovo. That seemed to turn on an assumption that a poel is the same dinim as an eved. And then we just saw just clear formulations in the Marit, where he ran with this idea that he's gufo kanui, and over the nafkamina of the Marit. Well, why did he say this? He didn't really flesh out any nafkamina, just his formulations were very telling. Right? Eino yachal lachzero because gufo kanoi.
Well, specific
performance. Yeah, and eino yachal lachzero suggested that he would be compelled to finish the job. Notice again the formulation of the Marit. Eino yachal lachzero because gufo mishubad. And in the other Marit in Kiddushin, Shazesh Shibet Gufo Lemalacha. We'll come back to that formulation, correlated to the Radvaz that we're going to see today. On the other side of the spectrum, we saw Tosvos and Kiddushin Yud Zayin, who explicitly said that a Poel is Lav Gufo Kanoi, and that's why he's disanalogous to the Eved. So if he gets sick for half of the contract term, what's the din, according to Tosvos?
If it's for half or less of the contract term,
he gets paid, and what does he have to do? I mean, he has to make up the time. He's not going to get paid for the time he didn't work, in contrast to an Eved. Why is that? Tos said, because Poel is Lav. Lav Gufokano. Very good. Who disputed Tosvos, Lashitaso? Marami Rutenberg. Maram thought that a Poel has the same din as an Eved. So if a Poel gets sick halfway through, he collects the whole contract. And the Poel gets a windfall. Because Poel Gufo Kanoi, so it's the Baal Bayis is lost to bear. The Ramban and the Ritva, well, first we'll focus on the Ramban. Remember the Ramban said, what's that?
Yeah.
Oh, the underline in the middle. I'll get, yeah, you get rid of it. Yeager. The Ramban, with respect to Ona, seemed to hold a position that entails what about Gufo Kanoi?
It's not Mechira.
It's not Mechira, very good. I love Memkarhu. On the face of it, we said that means that it's lav gufo kanoi, it's not a transfer of property, that's why there's no na. But then when we encountered the Ritva and Bamitzian involved, we were forced into a more nuanced position. Why?
Well, if we want the Ritva to be l'shitaso, then there has to be some kind of na.
Exactly. If we want the Ritva to be l'shitaso, so we want to say there's a kinyan, even though that kinyan is not a kinyan of mechira. Right? Which motivates us to look down the road into what's the compensation structure for the Poel. It's an interesting question whether the Ritva would concede that an Eved himself is like a Mechira. Presumably, yes. An Eved's like a Mechira. Even though Shneam Gufo Kanoi, Poel is Ke Hakna some other type, Eved is Hakna Linyan of Mechira type. Was that clear to everyone yesterday, that distinction? About how it could be a kinyan without being a mechira, and how that ties into the compensation structure. Yeah.
Can you repeat that one more time? Just
so yeah.
First, the Ritva,
Okay, yeah, explain the Ritva issue quickly. Very quickly.
The Ritva in this part of Rosh Mitzia makes the claim that the sort of act, the kinyan, or the whatever's happening in regard to the poel, isn't considered a memkar. But we also in the Ritva consider toys that as a kinyan limsa. And so we have to figure out a way to resolve these two positions of the Ritva. The suggestion that we raised in Shiur on Tuesday was that it's a hakadah, a transfer,
which results in a property right.
Right, but isn't a sale.
Exactly.
And the reason we suggest why it might not be a sale is because the payment may come after the transfer of property or not.
That's right. So it's not like an upfront sale where he says, I'm selling myself for 6 years, give me 300 grand. It's I'm selling myself for, I'm giving myself to you for 300 years. And that hakna generates entitlements to quantum merit compensation. Quantum merit is a fancy Latin term, quantum merit, I mean, in accordance with what he deserves, for how much value he creates for the employer.
Yeah. It's not actually,
But it's not like a sale up front where he's getting paid for the term of his service. And that may tie into things like Eino l'schiros el levasof, yashno l'schiros metchilo v'yadsof, right? Which is that he's accruing value either at the end or throughout the period of his employment, but not up front. That's something we have to look into. So we're gonna footnote that discussion. So today we begin, we're picking up on the thread of reasoning in the Rishonim that Poel is lav gufo kanui. So this is the Tosfos-esque position. And the first sheet that we have today is Rabbeinu Yerucham. So in Mesharim Nesiv Chavtes Chelek Dalad, what was Rabbeinu Yerucham's position?
Mechila
b'amira works. It's sufficient. To Mishakar the Evet. And what does that entail in your view, Ben? What does...
It entails that it's...
The status of Gufo Kanoi, Lav Gufo Kanoi?
It seems to be Lav Gufo Kanoi.
That's right. It sounds Lav Gufo Kanoi because when the Gemara and Kedushin spoke about Evet every Gufo Kanoi, the Nafkamina was the requirement of a Get Shifur, right, a Kinyan to go free. And Rabbeinu Yerucham is telling us that that does not apply to a poel. So he cuts anchor. He cuts Poel away from Eved, which would suggest Lav Gufo Kanoi. Okay. And most of you saw that in Simon, I think it's Shin Lamed Gimel, the Shulchan Aruch runs with that psak of the Rabbeinu Yerucham. We have two chuvos of the Radvaz. My sense is... That's right. I mean, see, he thought it was wrong. He's disagreeing.
I mean, tomorrow I'm back.
Welcome back. Right. Right. Correct. And we saw the Radvaz was in that camp also, right? That first day as a toast, etc., etc.
Yeah.
Et
so then he was like, right, he does the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. And I'll say, I think when the Shach explains that psak of the Ramah following the Rabbeinu Yerucham, he says explicitly that this is in tension with the Maram, and it's because we're pastening Poel Lav Gufo Kanoi. So we'll get to that at the very end. So we have two chuvos of the Radvaz. I think why don't you tell me what you think they say? What's the Radvaz's main position on this question, in your view?
He agrees with the Rabbeinu Yerucham.
Excellent, right? He agrees with Rabbeinu Yerucham. You don't require a get shichur or a kinyan to go free. Amira alone is sufficient. Now, what did he find interesting in the Radvaz? Let's start with the first tshuva. And what could we extract from here? Okay, so he has... Okay, he was asked about a Malamed, right? That the same case that the Maram had. So what are the explicit points here? So number one, yes, like the Marit, he has this distinction between Davar HaAvod and Davar Sheino HaAvod. Right, so the right of a Poel to be Chozer, he seems like he wants to say, may not apply if there's a Davar HaAvod. correct?
Umar, when you say there is no right to decode there somewhere on the page, do you just mean that there's a, is that just your way of saying there's a region to compensate?
Yeah, so very good point, right? So we, I think you just, you checked out for when Yoni made this Ha'ara, that in the language of the Ma'arid, it's ambiguous when he says, Eino yacha lachzar b'davar ave, does that mean that he has a duty not to, in which case he's considered to be in breach if he does and he has to pay compensation, or does it mean that he can't?
Right.
And that will compel him to uphold the terms of the agreement. Right? It's ambiguous.
Right. No.
Yeah, exactly, and it's likewise ambiguous in the Red Vaz, right? Hadik Haimlan Poel Choser B'chatzi Ayom. That's im ein sham davar ha'aved, right? So is that talking about the ability to be Choser, or the right, meaning the fact that he has no duty not to be Choser?
I think it would be pretty astonishing I think it would be astonishing if actually what that meant was we compel performance.
Yeah, you think compelling specific performance is like an untenable conclusion.
Yeah, like in the case of all the things we know, I'm against this group convoy language is not here more than it's clarified. We know that the worker has a limited ability to be first of all, he can not show up. He can just get out of it. And if you're going to say, well, Kitty was already Kitty was called from the moment of the labor commences, then we do know that there's a limited everybody agrees that in a case where there's no loss to the owner for non-performance, he can get out of it, and he's still okay. Whatever, you just suggest that we should only go one step up, I think, in a case where we would require compensation.
Yeah, okay, I hear the reasoning. I mean, so Cole's making the case that we should never compel specific performance, right? If he's allowed to back out entirely when there's no davar aved, then you should just go one step up when there is davar aved and make him pay damages, not compel specific performance. But hold that thought, Cole, because we're gonna address this question held on. We're gonna address this question head on. Okay. So hold off on that thought. In the Red Vaz, I want to just draw your attention to this phrase, where he says that the reason why Amira alone is sufficient to be Meshachar the Eved is why? Because we don't compare, to be Meshachar the Poel, is because the analogy between a Poel and an Eved is an imperfect one. Right? We don't compare them L'chol L'shar Dvarim, we don't compare them L'chol Mili, only with respect to a few specific incidents. Right? And he says, Deha Ein Gufo Kanoi Ke'Eved Ivri. So he's explicit that there is no kinyan aguf when it comes to a poel, and that's why mechila alone is sufficient.
Well, that's why you can close it. Right?
Well,
it's more than that in the Rav
Vaz.
That's why you can close it.
Afi l'zil matzi l'hadeh d'ha en guf o'kanei. Right. The reason why the poel has the ability to back out is because en guf o'kanei. Correct. I think that's right.
Only if it's not that rough.
Well?
If it's not that rough.
Good. So this is what I'm not sure about in the Red Vaz. Is the Red, and I mentioned this in the comment on Badim. So is his point that when it's a Davar Ha'aved, then Gufo Kanui? And so there are cases where there's a Kinyan Aguf, but Davar Ha'aved. Or is his point that there never is a kinyan aguf, but despite that, there's a problem with him being choser b'davar ha'aved? You see, it's not, the language of the Red Vaz is not perfectly clear. Because he prefaces his comment by saying, yes, there's this chus chazara when there's no davar avid. And then he says, and that's why, the reason why there's this chus chazara is because ein gufo kanoi. So the question is that second statement qualified by the first statement? Within the logical space of when you're able to be chozer, that chazara works because lav gufo kanoi. I think that's like...
It does not make sense to say that when there is no loss to the owner, there is no kinyan hagufa, and therefore, when there is a loss, there is a kinyan hagufa.
You don't like the contingent kinyan hagufa.
No, I mean, it can depend on.
No. There's no kinyan hagufa when there's just when there's a loss. Where does that kinyan? You need a proper.
Look, either you own the thing or you don't own the thing. Your ownership is not contingent on whether you're going to suffer a loss. That's incidental.
It would be crazy if the kind of ownership you exercise over the thing were contingent on the loss, the kind of whatever, the legal relationship that the buyer has with the worker were contingent on the loss that he derived from the worker's non-performance. No, it's the other way around. We calculate the effect of the loss based on, you have to judge the ownership issue prior.
I'm very sympathetic to that argument. Yair, I think Yair wants to respond to you, though.
I'm not sympathetic to that argument.
Yair is not sympathetic to your argument.
Should I come closer to that?
Yeah, you can come closer to that.
Yeah. We know already from the Gemara of Mitzia that depending on the kind of work one hires a poel to do, the legal relationship changes. For example, in the issue of Mitzia le Adon or to the poel himself. So I can imagine, if I hire you to perform certain kinds of labor that constitute a davar aved, the nature of the kinyan is different.
Right.
Yoni agrees with me, too.
The davar aved is pure.
Right, so you notice there's a bit of a... not only is there a conceptual, it sounds like there's almost like a factual disagreement between you guys. Because Yair and Yoni, the way Yair put it is that, well, when I hire you for work that is a davar aved, that's going to trigger a kinyan aguf. Right, that was your formulation, Yair.
Work that isn't
done. What?
What does that mean,
work that isn't done? I hire you for a job that if you don't do it today, it's going to cost
more. Right, there are a million people who could do the exact same job.
Yeah, like if
I think Cole is pointing out that we shouldn't think of it in terms of, is it the kind of work that's davar aved? Davar aved is incidentally,
right.
Is the guy going to suffer a loss from it? It's not like there are two kinds of work. There's work that's davar aved and there's work that's non-davar aved. It's all the same kind of work, just in some cases the fallout is loss, and in some cases there's no loss.
I don't agree with that because I think it's, yes, it could work, but I think in a lot of cases
it's
you don't know
what
they have.
Yeah, hold off, Cole. Ben is talking. Hold off for a second, Cole.
I feel like there's sometimes when you don't know that it's going to be a table thing that's a davar aved. It could be
that right.
To build something, the way the worker built it was
right.
The way that it was now a davar aved.
Or it'll depend if it's going to rain tomorrow or not, right? So the poel doesn't show up for a day, right? He breaches by not showing up. And then whether or not it's davar aved will depend on the weather forecast.
The Ravaz feels comfortable pointing out that a malamed is davar aved, right? There's an idea that certain kinds of work can be categorized as
this is very important. So I think this, so good. So when we look, now we have to keep our eyes open for when we get into davar aved, is this... constitutive of the kind of labor relationship that you have with the poel. It's like a quality of a different kind of a relationship because you're hiring him for work that has the threat of loss. Or is it like an incidental fallout from the breach? Right? I think that's like a nice way of capturing your machlokas with Cole and with Ben. Right? So good. So I think it's an open question in the Radvaz himself what he means. So again, he prefaces his comments by saying the poel has the poel chozer if it's ancient davar aved, and then he says the reason why you're able to be chozer is because in gufo kanoi. So the way Yair reads that is the reason. So in a case where it's a davar aved, maybe gufo kanoi, and that's why you're not able to be chozer. And Cole's going to say no. There never is gufo kanoi in a poel case according to the Radvaz. And the reason why you're not able to be chozer in a davar aved case is for some external reason, namely the loss itself, not because of the kinyan. Right? It's wrong for you to back out because you're going to cause a loss, regardless of the kinyan that you, regardless of the absence of kinyan. Okay? Good. Yeah. Good. I want to just, maybe there's a diak here that supports Cole's reading. So you see this next phrase, V'yafal gavad medaminan po'al eved ivri l'shar dvarim medaminan lay, v'lo l'hai milsa.
If you where are you in the Shuvah?
So we're on, what page is this? Page 8.
The beginning of the,
yeah, the first, the second paragraph in the first Shuvah, third line. Right, so he's saying, even though we equate, yeah, even though we equate po'al to an eved ivri, that's only with respect to other things, right? So if Yair is right,
that would be from the Shua. He says there's no question except because of the Shua.
Well, we'll hold off on the Shua thing, but my point is just that if Yair is right, then the Radvaz should just say, oh, the Kesher to an Eved Ivri is for the Davar Aved case. Right? Because the Radvaz is bothered by, oh, if they're not, if Ein Guf Okanoi, then how do you explain the connection to Eved Ivri? And his answer is, oh, it's with respect to other dinim. If Yair is right, then the Radvaz should have said, how do we explain the Kesher to Eved Ivri? Oh, in a Davar Avod case, it's like an Eved Ivri.
Well, he's not, he might say specifically that it's the case or not Davar Avod, so that's why he's not
talking. Right, but you'd think L'shar Dvarim is...
The Gemara makes the Kesher between Eved Ivri and a Po'el, it should limit that to the reason of Avod.
Right.
I'm saying he says specifically. It's assumed Davar Avod, and then he talks, and then he goes on to proceed about it. All the rules of things that are not davar avod. What if that's what davar avod? I don't think he's just not addressing it. It's a tshuva, not
yeah.
Not a corpus. You know.
I hear. I want to make just another diak, just very, not sure how strong this diak is, but in, when the Radvaz is trying to motivate his theory that mechila should work without a kinyan. So he says this whole thing, lav gufo kanoi, etc., fine. But then he throws in this phrase, also he's like, who could object to my principle? Because once the balabayis says, zeal, meaning go, your duties have been extinguished, you're satisfied your obligations, it's ki'ilu nishlam hazman. It's as if the worker fully satisfied the term of employment. So what do you think of that formulation? Right, so he's arguing, of course mechila alone is sufficient, because what the mechila does is that it fast forwards the date. Right? So it's like when I say you finished, you were supposed to work until January, when I say you did everything you had to do, it's as if we're holding in January. That's the Radvaz is. What do you think of that way of conceptualizing mechila? And that's, therefore, it shouldn't need a kinyan. Yoni?
It suggests there's no kinyan at all.
Yoni?
Well, there's just like a stance on like mechila in general is mechila vitor and matana.
Okay.
Question.
Yeah. Okay.
Is there just taking a stance on like
matana? No, I actually think that I want more specific to our sugya.
I mean, it also needs to be. It seems to kind of push back on like the whole line that it's not an eved ivri, because if it was not an eved ivri, so then why do you need to say
this further logic?
Okay, so
it's an interesting point, but I think he's just trying to motivate his idea further. He's trying to say, like, who could disagree with my point that mechila is sufficient? Because once he's mochel, it's as if the guy satisfied his obligations. As if we're...
Which implies that there's a need for satisfying
obligations. No, I think he's just trying to, gain traction or build up the intuition that it should work.
Yeah, he's trying to prove that the mechila works, but I think it proves
that
push back against
the conceptual. Okay, so I mean, I'm inclined to agree with what Cole was saying just now, that this, you couldn't say that if you had a Kinyan conception of Poel. Cole, just put yourself on mute when you're not talking. Right? You couldn't say this if you had a Kinyan conception of Poel.
You don't like to hear the chatter.
You couldn't say this if you had a Kinyan conception of Poel, because the mechanics have nothing to do with the, oh, my mechila speeds up the clock. right? Because the issue has to do with, like, the ownership, the property right that you hold inside the Eved. So if anything, you'll say the Mechila is a kind of Hefker. Right? You wouldn't say it's as if you satisfied your service requirements.
That relates to
you hear what I'm saying?
Wait, would that be true though? If like if you could in theory get the Abbot to satisfy his service requirements, you wouldn't be free?
Well, that means a good chef or no.
And Abbot, isn't that the whole point of your own cast Abbot that you're effectively running the clock forward?
Or I think there you're buying, he's at least just buying out the rest of the term.
Is that what you're doing? Or that
you're leading to,
Right, so I think that this phrase, well, I'm not super convinced, but I think there's an argument to be made that the phrase of Kivan Damrle Zil Havakilu Nishlam Hazman, which he thinks would be effective even for Shvua, I think that conceives of the nature of the obligation in terms of providing services.
Right.
So I say, oh, it's Kilu Hiskabalti. It's as if I got the services. Right? Which makes sense if you think of it in terms of this quid pro quo. I'm paying you for the services, and I'm using this legal fiction of, oh yeah, it's as if I got all the services that you were supposed to provide me. That kind of argument wouldn't work if you were thinking in terms of Kenya. That's the point I want to make. So the Radvaz makes it seem like he's making two separate points. The first point being that Lav Gufo Kanoi, the second point being Kilu Nishlam Azman. My sense is that the only reason why he's able to make the second point of Kilu Nishlam Azman is because he made the first point that it's not a Kenyan.
Let's just say, like, when we say Kenyan, we made it, like, Poel, we say it's a Kenyan Lazman.
And then once you could trick the Zman.
But I
think that's more, that would be more problematic. That's, again, I'm not super wedded to this observation, but I think there's something to it. Yoni, Gabe.
I feel like you're probably right in the Baz's reading, because he's clear that he thinks it was Kinyan Aguf. But I think the notion of Kilu Nishlam Hazman could be read in Kinyan Aguf concept, that essentially when you establish a contract with your employee, there's a built-in get shiftur at the end of the allotted time. So like when you make the contract, there's an assumption that I'm both hiring you and firing you at the same time once the labor has been completed, or once the time has been completed.
Right.
Essentially, this is a built-in get shiftur. So once you fast forward to the end of this allotted time, you've essentially freed the Kinyan Aguf or removed the sheep.
There is no such thing.
Right. Yeah. So Yoni's in agreement with you, Gabe. Right.
And
yeah. So your Lanceman from Colombia agrees with you. So Yoni agrees with you, Gabe, right? He's saying maybe this trick of fast forwarding the clock would solve the Kenyan problem as well. Okay, so we could disagree with this. Cole, you sounds like you have a point here.
I'm glad that was said, because that is a good reductio of that view.
Right.
A built-in get shifter,
it's like the people who want to solve the Aguna problem, so we got Yair here, through like building, you build a get into the original marriage.
Cool, I don't think you need to say Arbaz, but you'll need to say something for the Arbaz. Arbaz is asking a strong question, so why don't we ever see a get shifter for an employee if there's really seen in Agu, if we take the Riva or the Raman seriously, then where is the get shifter? How do you explain those sheep goes?
Okay, so...
I think we should be reductive about the phrase Kinyan Hagov. We should stop using it because it does not... It clouds this analysis. It is forcing you into a position where you're coming up with built-in Gita Shifror. I think that is a good wake-up call that this is not the route to go down.
Well... Okay, so this is a very good back and forth. I don't believe in building Gita Shifur. I think there's a different answer to Gabe's point about how do you explain the absence of a Get Shichur in most Poel relationships, which we'll get to in 1 second. Okay, so...
Okay.
Good, so we'll get to that in a second. Yeah, so... In the end of that first tshuva, everyone's with me. Everybody gets the back and forth here, just about that observation about whether you could fast forward the clock. And my view is that that really helps you mostly for just if you have a contract view. Yoni and Gabe think that that would help you even if you have a Kinyan view, right? Because they have like this built-in get shichur idea. And Cole is with me that that's a little bit problematic. The end of that tshuva sered vaz. So he gets upset with the Marami Rutenberg, who says that you need a Kinyan to be Meshachrer a Poel. And he says, V'chiyala al hadash ha'afilu nisratu shneim levatel haschirus lo yoil ad sheyushlam hazman shekavu v'havadai lo mistaver. So what do you think? What do you think of that phrase in the Radvaz? He's saying, of course I have to be right, that Mechila is sufficient, because it's crazy to think that there's no way to absolve the Eved's, or to extinguish the Eved's the Poel's obligation to his employer. Right? It's impossible to think, afilu nisratu shneim levat haschirus, lo yoel ad sheyushlam hazman shekavu, v'havadai lo mistaver. Is that a good argument? Is that a crazy argument?
Why is it so crazy? If I have a contract with a company,
yes,
right, so I have to work for 3 years.
Yes.
And both of us agree to terminate. You can't just leave. That's not legally binding. You have to break the contract.
We have to terminate it, right?
You have to have some legal way of terminating.
Right.
Both leave.
So you're saying it's a really bad argument.
Yeah, it's like the response by the Maharam would be like, oh, you don't have to wait till it ends out.
Just do a Kinyan.
Do a Kinyan.
Yeah. Write another agreement that says that the agreement has been terminated, a waiver or something, right?
Right. But so that's like an absurd argument.
Yes, I don't understand the Radvaz's argument here at all. Right, look at his argument. He's like, oh, if you think that Mechila alone is not sufficient, right? Im bedibur, this is that first line in the last paragraph of the first Radvaz. The im bedibur ein hashibur mistalik lo yadati b'mei yistalku. Oh, if dibur is not sufficient to extinguish the contract, then how could it ever be extinguished? And Yoni's like, well, here are a million possibilities. Right, a Kinyan, get shichror. Right? Maybe Tashlamei Mamon. Right, so what kind of argument is this?
I mean, this is pretty good evidence that the Radvaz has my view. He doesn't even count the idea that it gets shit for, like, it doesn't even enter his...
Well, the Radvaz is what he's like, next like,
yeah. Right. But I think there is some... I think there is an observation here. Right, so maybe Cole's actually right that... The Radvaz
is not strong enough to trigger a requirement for a get shichur.
Right. He doesn't even entertain the possibility to require a Kinyan, because that's like a category mistake. Who needs a Kinyan just to absolve a promise? Right? Meaning I can either hold you to your promise or not hold you to your promise, right? But to think that you need a Kinyan or a shtar to extinguish a promise is a category mistake. Right? So maybe Cole's right here, actually, that... There's kind of implicitly in his reasoning, you see that he's not even entertaining the Kinyan idea. Because once you entertain the Kinyan idea, well, it's natural. You dissolve it through a Kinyan. As you said, that's the Maram's answer. But the Radvaz is just so caught up in his island of no Kinyan, just contract, just binding agreement, that, well, if Dibur is not going to work, then that means that you think Mechila can never work. There's no way of getting out of an agreement.
By the way, not that I have any sympathy for the Kinyan and Guf point, but there is a middle ground. A Get Shichur is strong medicine, is a strong answer.
Right, and a Kinyan is in between.
There are ways to break, I mean, what I think is a very plausible view, is that like, they need some kind of Kinyan solution, or some more, let's call it an egalitarian Kinyan, that, breaks up the... you know, Merkila might work, but something else.
Right.
Well, you know,
right.
You might say oral Merkila doesn't work, if that's like, you know, how did the relationship start? Presumably they did some kind of kimi kalib, but otherwise not would be enforceable. So it's not crazy to say that you need some kind of kimi in order to break up a kimi.
Correct.
But you might need a weaker kind of kinyan than a getcha.
Yes, but I think you're right to point out that the Radvaz thinks that even a kinyan is inappropriate. Right, a kinyan is too strong.
Right.
Now, let me just take one final hara on this Radvaz. So look at the last bolded line here. So he says hilkach nachon, right? For the foregoing, based on the foregoing arguments, it's clear to me that if the Baal HaBayis says zil zechei ba'atzmo, right? Go, you're free. Do whatever you want. Shuv eino yachal lachufo. You cannot compel the Eved to complete his work. So, I think that's a little problematic. He's saying, once the Baal HaBayis says zeal, you can no longer compel the poel to work. Now, something should strike you as problematic, right? Does that rub you the wrong way, Yoni?
No, I'm not sure why.
Lachufo? Whoever spoke about lachufo? Whoever said anything about compelling performance? Right? At worst, the remedy is going to be pay out the damages.
Now, if he's a mod, he's not countenancing the Rabbah doesn't disagree with you. When he says Lakufo, he means, you know, re-inaugurate the contract that in order to re-inaugurate a contractual situation in which non-performance a violation of the contract.
Ah. So lachufo is meaning that lachufo being under the penalty of paying damages.
Correct. You mean that it's possible there may be two ways to
read. Yoni's disagreeing with you. Yoni, what's your thought?
No, I think he's pushing back against the strain of thought that the Maharam advocates for a specific performance, that the Malawi is Kyle 3 years. He argued
he's got a duty to work.
He's got these 3 years of tutoring.
And you think that he thinks on the Maharam's view?
I don't know if he thinks about the Maharam, or he's just pushing back against that view. There's something he's trying to talk and pushing back.
That would compel specific performance, right?
Yeah. He's definitely pushing back against like specific performance.
Let's see. In the Maharam's
Tshuva. The Maharam sounds a little bit like he has to keep working.
That's right. Let's see.
The formulation of the Maharam is, it's not to get his money back.
Good. So that was in the... So that was in the Maharam, in his quotation of the Maharam?
That's it. Quotation is summary.
Oh, yeah, also here in the Maharam itself, right? So, Viratza Laakvo, right? So the employer wants to prevent him, although preventing him is somewhat ambiguous between, right, having the legal claim right to prevent him from leaving versus physically, right, having the legal right to... like compel specific performance, right? Because you might say the legal right to prevent him just gives rise to a claim and damages.
It's not clear that what would happen if
he wants
to assume the contract.
Correct.
But it sounds like what they're trying for is
keep him working.
Going,
right.
And we assume that two parties in the contract, if one is forced to abide by
will
the
work.
Contract, will do this.
So, but that does lean more in the compelling performance.
Yeah, I agree.
Right. And then especially, La'akvo could just mean to prevent him.
Sorry, go ahead.
In the Radvaz, it's even a stronger formulation, which is lachufo, right? So I think that's shuvei niyocha lachufo, right? To force him. Yeah, Cole, you want to say something, and then we'll look at the next Shuvah's Radvaz.
I was just going to say, this reading of it that... you know, involves compelling performance. There are two ways to think about breach of contract. Either it's just like, you know, if they're just like two ways out of the contract and they're kind of equal from the contract perspective, performance or compensation,
right?
Or which is not right. Or there's such a thing as breach of contract, which is non-performance, and then you incur the obligation to compensate. The people who are reading the Razbaz as having the compelling performance view are ascribing implicitly to the Razbaz the first counterintuitive view of contract. Because there's a way of reading the Razbaz, because there's a way not to read it that way, which is that the power to force it back into a contractual relationship, which he has to breach in order to get out of performance.
Correct.
And
correct.
Pay
correct.
Right.
Which is, I think, why.
Yeah,
yes, I agree. I could see it going
you
both
agree?
Ways. Well, I could see it going both ways. I'm not wedded to either interpretation, but. Yes, I acknowledge that you could read L'chofo not in terms of compelling specific performance, but L'chofo meaning that we compel him to view the contract as still valid, right? And then that, if breached, that would give rise to a duty of compensation, right?
The point I'm making is that you end up ascribing to the Razbaz a counterintuitive view of contract, but you take the stronger reading of L'chofo.
Okay.
Well, it's
correct. This is the enemy. Right. Correct. Now, so the big picture, these are all small horrors. The big picture of the Radvaz is that there is no kinyan, there's no connection to Eved, and I'm just pointing out just how far in that direction is he going. Right? To the extent that there's never even a havamina that there could be a requirement of a get shichur. Right? So it sounds like the Radvaz is very much in that land. I think the fact that he says that a mechila is ki'ilu nishlam hazman puts him very much in the contract land, right? So he's just conceptually at the opposite polar extreme of the people who think gufo kanoi in terms of a property right. Now, in the second Shuvas HaRadvaz, so it sounds like somebody just asked him whether a shibud kui nimchal, which is dibur, or whether you require a kinyan. So he responds, talks about there's some shibudim that are shibud haguf, and some shibudim are a mere shibud mamon. I wish he gave a better explanation as to what fell within the shibud mamon category. Right?
It sounds like it's a foreign property. He refers to the Gemara, but he only
answers a kid. So I owe you money or something. That's a shibud mamon. But a duty to perform is a shibud haguf. Right, perform labor or something. Yeah? Okay. I just want to point out that those terms are very ambiguous. And here I'm sympathetic to Cole's point that a lot of what we want to do is to just precisify these terms. If you jump back to, well?
I like the word precisify.
Yeah. It's a big philosophy term. If you look at the Maritz, so notice, in both Maritz in Kedushin and the Maritz in Yerodea, he says that Poel is nikneh b'kinyan haguf. Okay? That's why Mechila doesn't work. Why? Shezeh shibed gufo l'melacha. So the Marit, I think the Marit is roughly contemporaneous with the Radvaz, maybe like a generation later. So in the Marit's vernacular, shibud gufo l'melacha, I think, is synonymous with there being a kinyan haguf. Does everybody see that? That's the Marit in Kedushin, right? Poel is nikneh b'kinyan haguf. Therefore, he needs a kinyan b'shichror. Mechila is insufficient. Why? Shezeh shibed gufo l'mlacha. It's a shibed haguf. And that shibed haguf is too strong to break with a mere mechila. Same thing with the Marit in Yerodea. Poel gufo kanoi ke'eved ivri. And therefore, hechad ika pseida inu yachal lachzar bo de gufo mishubad. That phrase, gufo mishubad, has the connotation of a kinyan haguf with the nafkamina that he can't back out, and that mechila is not sufficient to let him go. See that? That's the Marit's formulation. But then when we come back to the Radvaz, it sounds like he wants to say, l'shitaso, that there's no kinyan aguf whatsoever. Let's pull it back up. There's no kinyan aguf whatsoever. But he still refers to the melamed and the poel as a shibud haguf, which is yotzei with mir mechila. So it sounds like for the Radvaz, there's an important conceptual difference between shibud haguf and kinyan haguf. Does everybody see that? He says, so for the right? Did I get that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very, just, so you, they're using the terms in different senses. Does everybody agree with that analysis? Yeah? Right? See, we just have to be careful about this, like the imprecise use of terms. I don't know who's more correct. I mean, I would say, I think actually the Radvaz is more correct here than the Marit. Right? Because there's no reason, why conflate the idea of a Kinyan Aguf with a Shibud Aguf? A Kinyan connotes some sort of property right, and a Shibud just connotes some sort of obligation. So there's a obligation on the Poel, right, or an obligation held, a duty, a right held against him, or a duty that is imposed upon him. It's a Shibud Aguf. Whereas a Kinyan Aguf is some sort of like property right that inheres in his guf.
Not if you have like all like a Chomer and the Kula that come with, like the
Maram. I'm just saying in terms of the terms.
No, but I'm saying if you believe like the Maram that like, you get sick, then there's no for you.
Isn't that a Kinyan Aguf?
Yeah, they're implying Kinyan Aguf.
Right.
Okay, so Maram makes sense. Like, is,
I'm saying the Marit. I'm just saying the Marit should have been more precise and called what he calls a Shibud Aguf, a Kinyan Aguf. That's my point.
Yeah.
I think the Radvaz has the... I'm just giving points to the different Rishonim here, right? I'm saying, I think the Radvaz got it more correct than the Marit got it. What do you... I mean, do you guys have thoughts on this? We'll see Rabbi Chanan. I think Rabbi Chanan agrees with my analysis of this.
Who's the... Are they both just both using the term Shibud Aguf? They're getting that term from elsewhere.
They're just both using it, I think. I don't think it has a common ancestor. I mean, the Gemara, I don't know if the Rebbe Zabrina Tom talks...
Why should Machlokes have interpreted the phrase? I mean, what phrase would... If you're saying the Radvaz is more correct, then what phrase would the Maharit use other than Shibud
Aguf? Kinyan Aguf.
I think it's the word Shibud.
Right, the word Shibud, I think, has like a weaker connotation than the word Kinyan. Right? As you can see for the Radvaz, he's saying... Well, yeah, you know, it's a Shibud Aguf, but ain't gufo kanoi. And that's why he's yotei b'mechila.
Right. So
we have to keep our eyes open. We have to keep our eyes open. Right, we have to keep our eyes open.
It could just be enough to be whether you require a formal dissolution.
Right, but we know that the Marit requires a formal dissolution. And he attributes that to a Shibud Aguf. The Radvaz calls it a Shibud Aguf and does not require a formal dissolution.
Oh, whatever. I mean, that's okay.
I mean, they use the terms differently. That's what I'm pointing out. Okay, now, to the substantive observation of the Radvaz, so the last line on page 8. So he's upset with the Chuvas HaRashba and the Chuvas Marit, Chuvas Maram. Well,
they didn't overlap or about the Marit, but they both were in different spots.
Right, so it's...
Right,
the Radvaz is earlier, right?
Yeah, Radvaz was at... Radvaz died like 2 years before.
Right, so it's kind of funny how the term, you know, took on a different sense already by the time the Marit came around. Or maybe Marit was just being sloppy. I don't know. So... The Radvaz here in the last line on page 8 says that I'll prove to you that the Maharam is wrong. And how did he prove that? And notice here his formulation changed from his earlier tshuva. What's his proof? It's on the board. Yes, lo ra'inu v'lo shamanu, that an employee requires a get shichror upon his upon completion of his service. So notice last time, you know, he didn't even contemplate this in the first tshuva. By the time this tshuva comes around, so he's saying, well, if gufo kani would require a get shechur, so what do you...
I think this tshuva was actually first. I think the first tshuva that Ravaz references another tshuva which he discussed with the Maharam, and I assume this was it.
Oh, you think this one's first?
I mean, there may be a third tshuva.
Right,
also
maybe a third.
This, but
I think this one's Simen Pei Ches, and this one is Simen Shin Lama Gimel.
Yeah, I don't know.
Right.
That might not matter.
Right, right. Well, nothing I'm saying hinges on the chronology, though, but... Right?
Yeah.
But that never run the background, doesn't that never require a get shofar if he's finishing with some, in the 7th year or the week, since he needed a get shofar?
Yeah, it's a bit of an open question in the Gemara, right? Because the Gemara just says that if you're Meshachar in the middle of his term...
Right, so early you need a get shofar.
Right.
It sounds like you don't, though.
So then the Radvaz's argument would be, oh, well then I guess... In the middle of the term, when an Eved goes, when a Poel goes free, we've never seen a requirement of a get shichur, right?
So then you've just been using Poel and Shalala on that.
Right, right, right. I agree. It's a bad argument, right? It's like, okay. So first of all, you could say, A, that in a Hanami it's a problem. People should have Lorin of Eloshamanu, so maybe you grew up in Egypt and Sfat, but maybe the minhag there was wrong, right? And moreover, I think this is more relevant to us, and I think Cole was making this point, that you don't have to jump to get shichur. Right? There's something in between a get shichur and mir mechila bepet. What about a kinyan l'shachuro? Right? Which is to transfer the property right back to him. Right? So, you might think he's making the reductio ad absurdum too extreme for it to be effective. Right? Saying, oh, we never find a get shichur, but I don't think the Maram ever required a get shichur. What did Maram say?
He didn't say anything.
He didn't say anything, Maram.
He just said, here's what doesn't work.
Right. He never told us what would work. Right. He just said, lo zachi lenafshi b'amira b'alma. And so maybe a kinyan is sufficient.
But he had the word about.
Yeah, go call.
And you're saying, could even the word God using, my argument supports what you're saying, could even the word God using the, could even the word God reads the people who say that the kingdom is good as requiring performance, and he wants to get out of that controversy. It happens to be, he wants to just sell the notion that that's correct. It could be that even the people that talk about kinyan and good argue more likely than that, that all you need is that there's no, that it's not, you know, it's not your part of performance, that, you know, you just remain in the contract without a proper, it's illusion by a collision, it's no thing that you require that shit, or all that is on the side, for the red bod, he's required to be just kind of the solution possible, which is Nechila. But I agree, he's fighting, it seems as though he's fighting a bit of a straw.
Yes, yes. But I think, you know, in both this tshuva and the other tshuva, you see he sets up his opponent, he understands the Maharam school as having this very strong view. Right? Lachufo, get shichror, right? That's always how he sets up his adversary. So maybe he does understand them in very strong terms, like mamish, like an Eved Ivri or something. Right? Everybody with me? So you see the Radvaz is l'shitaso in how he conceives of his adversary. His adversary would hold, you could be kofa performance, his adversary would hold, you need to get shichur because gufo kanui. And you might think that his adversary is somewhere in between the way he conceptualizes him and his own position. Okay, last to Ara.
Did anybody actually say you need to get shichur?
Not that we've seen, right? Not that we've seen.
Right, so it's not, so I think the
response
is not being charitable.
Correct. I don't know, I mean, what are your thoughts, Yoni and Yair and Leib? Do you think that the Maram thinks you require a get shichur?
We haven't seen anything yet. Let's see.
Right. Okay, I want to make two more.
If he doesn't, then your Kinyan Aguf idea is in trouble.
There are other ways for an Evan to get out of the Kinyan also, right?
Yeah, Kinyan. Euro Kesef,
maybe at the end of the 6 years.
Yeah, so yeah, I don't think we're in such big trouble. two other Haros in this. Hold on, yeah. I want to cover a little more. I don't want to get stuck on this. Okay, so two other Haros in this Red Vaz. So the first is... So you see the paragraph that starts, V'su d'macha lo ha-shibud? Okay. Then he says, so look, ein gufo kanoi. Let me read this phrase carefully. So V'su d'macha lo ha-shibud, once the owner is mochal the shibud, v'havi machal ba'amira, ba'alma, and it's sufficient that you just have the verbal mechila. Why? The ein gufo kanoi ke'avid ivri. Right? Because there's no kinina guf. Then he makes the move. Again, not clear in the Radvaz formulation if he thinks that hecha deika davar ha'aved, there's a kinin aguf. Same ambiguity as in the other tshuva. Now, listen to this. He's going to prove to us that even when there's a davar ha'aved, mechila is sufficient. Okay? Because you might, let's say, suppose arguendo that I'm right, that there's a kinyan haguf when there's a davar ha'aved. The Radvaz is going to argue that still the poel could go free by amira alone. Can you see what he's trying to do? That's what he's trying to argue. Everybody with me? Okay. How's he going to argue that? You only tell us how he argues that. How's he going to show that? Oh. So I know that mechila alone is sufficient, even for davar ha'aved, because the remedy for a breach b'davar ha'aved is chiyuv mamon. And I could always be mochel chiyuv mamon. Oh. So notice, right, he dropped that lachufa lavo phrase from the other tshuva, where he was like contemplating, at least, again, machlokas, we were disagreeing how to read it, but he's not contemplating, he's saying the proof that mechila works is that the remedy is a mere monetary remedy, and monetary obligations are always subject to mechila. Right? Eino chayv im hifsido, eino chayv lo el mamon, v'hare machlo, v'zeh baru. Good argument, bad argument. What do you think? Yoni, what do you think? Somewhat compelling. Yeah, Yair doesn't like it. Why? I don't like it either.
Because I can say that the chiyuv mamon after a breach is what we were referred to earlier. It's a secondary breach.
Oh, that's exactly right. That's exactly the way I think of it. Meaning, you know, a pull from our Hofeld days, especially the second Hofeld article, is that you ought to distinguish carefully between the primary duty. So I added this to the Makoro sheet here in the bottom. My comments here, you can see, right? Yesh lechalik bein hashibud haguf shehu a primary duty lebein haachiyav mamon in a case of breach, which is just the secondary duty, and it's hard to prove from the secondary duty to the nature of the primary duty, right? So,
why don't you put the Hofeld article here for the
purpose? Well, I have my answer. Well, that's why we looked at Hofeld in the beginning of the year, right? Hofeld's point was that there are primary duties. And then, when they're breached, they give rise to secondary duties. And they're not the same thing. That's obvious, right? And he points out that people confuse them. Classic case. I have a duty not to violate the integrity of your person, not to harm your body. So you might think that's like a very severe kind of duty. But the secondary duty that gives that the breach of the primary duty gives rise to is a monetary obligation of compensation. Right? Nezek, tzar, sheves, ripoy, and boshes. But you can't infer from the fact that you only pay mamon that the primary duty is merely a fee of mamon. We know that it's not. Right? For harai, you can't be mochel on somebody being chovel begufcha. Because it's not a mere fee of mamon. Right? So, the Radvaz's argument here seems to be a bit of a logical error. If you assume this distinction between primary duties and secondary duties, right? He's proving that you could be mochel the eved, so you have a, let's say, primary right, let's just say, these are analogous, secondary rights. So the primary right here is the kinyan on the poel. The
the secondary duty is in the case of Chazara that the poel is going to pay Tashlumei Mamon. So I'm saying maybe this is a Kinyan Aguf, but the remedy in breach is something lesser, and we could have lots of reasons for that. Just like an Ayin Tachasayin. Why does Kabbalah pay Tashlumei Mamon? But the Rambaz thinks that you can infer from the fact that the secondary is a Tashlumei Mamon that the primary duty is a Tashlumei Mamon, and therefore it's obviously Nitan L'Mechila. And I'm saying the counterexample is from the case of Chavala. Right, Chavala, we know that you can't be mochel on the primary duty, even though the secondary duty is Tamir Fiyad Mama. Cool.
But the violation of the... Nah, it's not a good... I don't think your counterexample is a good one. What you can't be mochel on is not the... What you can't be mochel on is the iser aspect of it. But what you're, it's not
an example. Fine. So I could tinker with the example, right? So the point is that we all agree that a property right is not extinguished with mechila, right? I could be mafki or something, but that's different from mechila. If I own a book, I need to transfer title through a kinyan. Now, so I'm just saying, isn't it conceivable that the primary duty is a kinyan? The Baal HaBayis has a kinyan, a guf in the poel. When that's breached, as you said very nicely before, Cole, right? The remedies in breach are distinct from the duties under the contract. And so the remedy for breach is Tashlumei Mamon. But that doesn't shed light on the nature of the primary duty. Aren't you amenable to that, Cole?
It's funny. Now I think this is a good... I'm trying to figure out my problem.
So think about it for a second. Think about it for a second. Yair, what do you think? I'm making a good objection to the Red Vahas?
I mean, the Red Vahas might respond. I only to hold off, but the Red Vahas might respond that it's inconceivable that a primary duty of performance could generate a secondary duty of money. But I see no reason to think that.
Right. So, yeah, so there are a few things.
Especially if the secondary duty derives from something other than failure to perform, like the Nesivas and Dina Digar method.
Right, like Ayin Tachas. But I'm saying we have these paradigms out everywhere. Ayin Tachas Ayin, right, where the secondary duty is Mamon, even though the primary duty seems to be something more fundamental.
Yeah.
Right?
I think there are gods who just say that you have to do it.
Oh. Okay, good.
Excellent. I don't think he disagreed with the logic.
Excellent. I think you're right. I think you're exactly right. I think you're exactly right. So, let me just point out, just to be more explicit about Yoni's really excellent point. I'm saying, well, the Ravaz is wrong because he's confusing the secondary duty with the primary duty. And Yoni's saying, well, no, maybe the Ravaz conceives of contracts almost in that first sense that Cole was suggesting, that Tashlume Mamon for breach is not a secondary duty. It's just built in to the nature of the primary duty, right? Like Cole was saying. So the primary duty is just disjunctive. It's not a primary duty, breach of which gives rise to secondary duty. The primary duty itself is perform or pay. It's a disjunctive duty. It's a disjunctive. Right? I can perform or I can pay the equivalent value, right? This is just.
That doesn't make any sense.
Right? But Cole, I mean, before you called that the less intuitive way, now you're saying it's the incoherent way.
Right.
So the Ravaz would be saying, from the fact that there's a remedy of payment, you can demonstrate that the nature of the obligation is really just monetary, right? Which I think Yoni is 100% right to say that the remedy for breach is just built into the primary duty. It's not something distinct from it. And that's how to make sense of the argument.
I don't think you need to say that. And this makes me now. And this is just a disagree with hotel. I think that I think your Kabbalah example is fatally flawed. But let's put that to one side. Let's take an easy long example. So we said last year that basically the Chiyuv is what's happening. Okay? That's what you have primary recourse to. By the way, the same thing is true in Geneva and Geneva, assuming that the opinion is still effective. The primary theme is just the return of the object. So it is true, hope that was correct, that there's a conceptual distinction between the primary duty X and option of recourse Y. I don't think that's to say that we are, that in inferences from the second to the first are limited. Because if you're thinking up the Rabaz is making as a good theory, which is that recourse sometimes usually has to do with the kind of offense that there was. Now, it doesn't always have to be true. Sometimes there are methods of, you know, like murder. There's no restorative route for murder because you can't bring people back from the dead. So now the game is up. But when there is a way to get done, you should assume that you should have the least amount of distance. I think you should assume the least amount of distance between the method of recourse and the kind of offense. That's the point that Rabaz is making, and I think it's a good one. And I think you can actually keep Popel alive and fix that.
Right. So you guys hear Cole's point? Cole's trying to say that what the Radvaz is getting at, so, you know, the Radvaz is not a lot, there's a missing premise here in Radvaz's argument, which is that we should assume maximal coherence between the primary duty and the secondary duty, right? So you might say the Radvaz's point is that if the primary duty were opinion haguf, then the secondary duty really ought to be specific performance. Because that's closer in kind to the primary duty.
But that's impossible. It doesn't have to be. Doesn't
well?
That's impossible in the case of Dr. Hollywood.
Well, you compel him to...
What would specific performance be? I ruined the thing.
No, I mean, you don't let him leave. Right? I mean, he can't. He's locked in, and we're going to...
Yeah, I know, but the guy leaves anyway. That's what's happening. Right, a breach, you know.
Right, so it sounds like I think what Cole is saying is that the Radvaz is assuming that the remedy in Davar Aved is a mirchi of mamon, meaning we never even lechatchila, even ex ante, even before he walks off the job, and the fact under the assumption that secondary duty should be as tightly bound to the primary duty as possible, then a kinyan aguf wouldn't give rise to a mir tashlame mamon. Is that what you're saying, Cole?
Yes. I think so.
Yeah. Yoni, what do you want to say?
Well, I'm saying either get the
report.
One second, Cole. Hold on a second. Yoni's talking. One second.
Well, I'm saying, according to that argument, either disagree with Cole, probably think that's the two things. Effectively, Cole's argument effectively isn't there coincide. Yeah, you can differentiate in terms of primary duty or secondary duty in terms of, like, order. But the fact that you're mandating this very strong coherence between the two of them... It becomes a chronological distinction, but it doesn't become a...
Yeah. Also, especially in this case, I agree. And especially in this case, because that's Yair's point, which is also really good, which is that, look, I mean, there are just so many other reasons for why the secondary duty would be mamon. Because, like, all these b'dieved cases, right, where the guy's already gone, it doesn't help to bring him back. So our rule just says that the secondary duty is touching the mom. Right? Something like that. Yeah, right? Okay, good. So, but you guys hear my argument. Right? Cole's contrarianism notwithstanding, right?
Contrarianism. I don't think what you're saying.
No, my argument against the Radvaz.
Right, yeah.
That the Radvaz is confusing the primary duty with secondary duty. I think the best defense of the Radvaz is close to Yoni's point, which is, he's just conceiving it all as a primary duty. And then Cole has a different way of making sense of it, which is that if the primary duty were a kinyan aguf, secondary duty should be some sort of specific performance. I'm a little skeptical of Cole's reasoning because there are so many cases in halacha where the primary relationship is a kinyan, like in property rights. Well, I guess it's actually not. That's not such a good point. So take Neva, for example. So your primary duty is not to steal. If you do steal... What's the secondary duty? Beishev is exempt, right? Take return the object, and then, you know, maybe it's like a tertiary duty of compensation, right? Meaning, so maybe
not
capable. Tertiary meaning that if you breach the secondary duty by not getting it back, right? Like you lose the obligation, you change it, then this gives rise to tertiary duty of compensation.
Yeah, that's only sometimes. So
if this is breach. Right, this is breach.
I'm saying in terms of you can find specific examples where the primary duty coheres with the secondary duty.
Yes. But
there are plenty of examples where
it doesn't exist. But I am not a Zion.
Or Geneva.
Yeah, but Geneva, you might say that's a penalty that just does something different. Right, it's in addition to the...
But Ethamar, do you have an account of how... It's a little strange to say what you're saying, because then you're going to force the Rabbaz into a position. You're effectively taking the position that the Columbia guy was taking, Columbia Lishikato, was taking earlier, which is that the Rabbaz thinks that there are cases where a poel has a kidding on group, which means you don't want to take that seriously. There's a duty of performance. But that can't be true.
Say that one more time. You're saying it's the Columbia guys, Lishitasam, because they held that Bedavar Ave, there's a Kinin Aguf.
Yeah, correct. You want to read the Rabbaz as saying there is some kind of Kinin Aguf, no?
In a Bedavar Ave case, right? And their advice.
Right. So cash out Kinin Aguf for me. You're going to say it's to compel performance. No?
Correct. And their advice is saying.
Yes, that's nuts. Yeah, that's the same thing.
Well, no. So I agree that there are a lot of reasons why you wouldn't want to compel specific performance, right? Maybe it's just draconian. Maybe it's not fair. And so the secondary duty is mama.
No. More than that.
Right. But my point is that there's a lot of reasons why the secondary duty wouldn't cohere with the primary duty. And the Radvaz just ignores that. That's my... And I take your point. Your point is that there may be good reasons why he ignores that. Right?
Okay.
So I think that's where the dispute turns. Okay. One final ha'ara on the Radvaz is kind of an interesting point. He says, it's an interesting observation. So remember, he's not sure, is a malamed like a poel? Whatever. And then he says, even if a malamed is like a poel, he could be chozer with mechila alone, or he has a right to leave with just mechila, doesn't need a kinyan. Well, I'm sorry, he could be chozer even without mechila, I'm sorry. Right, I feel below mechila. Why? Kivan shehu muchzok ba'atzmo. So what I think he's trying to say here is that there are deos. Granted, the Maharam thinks you need a kinyan, right? Let me make sure I have this right. 1 second.
Then the poel can say kinyan if he wants.
Kimli, I'm saying it, but Kimli like what?
Kimli,
like,
I think that
malamed
are like regular poels,
and can leave
without.
I mean, because there's no
davar
aved?
There's
no davar aved, and there's no davar aved, I guess.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. So, he's saying that in a case of a suffix, so a poel can say Kimli, that he's like a poel who could always be chozer whenever he wants. Right? And the reason why you could say Kimli, only someone who's muksak can say Kimli, right? So he's saying a poel is muksak ba'atmo. So I was wondering whether the Maharam would agree with that contention. Would the Maharam agree with the Radvaz's assertion that the poel is muksak ba'atmo, and therefore, Neman B'tainas Kimli? Because once you hold that there's a Kenyan Aguf, you deny that the Poel is Mufzik Ba'atzmo. Right? He's property of the Balabais. So, because Mechukos, we've shown him whether Well, I'll mention that in a second. I don't want to cloud the issue. You see my point, though? So it's only on Radvazian assumptions that you can say that a poel is muslik ba'atzmo, because he assumes that there's no kinyan. It's just this lesser contractual relationship. But if you're Ma'aramian, then you might hold that he's not muchzik ba'asmo, and lehefech, the Baal HaBayis is muchzik bo until he's mishachar him with some sort of kinyan, which would bar him from...
What's the naskamina saying, muchzik bo?
So you could only assert a tainas kimli, right? If I'm muchzik, then I could say I'm muchzik, so I hold like this shita, which is helpful to my view. That's just like one of the rules of kimli. Well... What?
That's a
Toyin Vinitan thing. Yes, it's a Toyin principle.
Well, let's say the Shibud,
yes, would that be sufficient? Yeah, good question. I would think that even with the Shibud, so long as there's no real Gviya, that's not sufficient for Machzakos.
Is that true? If there's like a lot of land and
it's the Mishubad, yeah. It's a big, the Mishubad I'm talking about, Kinyan Lachet Zayin, the Mishubad is very complicated, but...
I can't say Kinyan at that point.
Right. I think Nax, if you're not Muchzak. Right? So, the point is that certainly if there's a Kinyan Aguf, you would think that vitiates the Poel's ability to say him, because he's not looks like Ba'asma. The Baal HaBayis looks like Ba. Yair, you're masking? I could see it going both ways, or?
Yeah, I guess the question would be, are we looking at the Chalaka before the sale takes place or after, right? I can make an argument that, you know,
right now, they had a labor agreement.
When I told myself, I made a labor agreement of the form of a poet. That was the sale that I made.
Right.
Back when I had the
Chalaka. No, but he says, Kivan Shehu Muchzak Be'atzmo. Right, it's like the way the kimli works is that if I'm holding on to the thing in dispute, I have the upper hand, and that gives me the ability to assert a tainas kimli. Oh, I held like the marshal against the Masas Binyamin or something.
Right.
And so he's saying, oh, poel is muchzak ba'atzmo. I mean, physically that might be true, but legally it's not always the case. Right, because legally, if he's a kinyan, then the Baal HaBayis is muchzak bo.
I mean, you could also argue that we're talking about a physical chazaka and not a legal chazaka. You know?
Okay.
Like, if you want to make me do something, right, you have to be motzi that avoda for
sure, but I think usually in halacha we care about the legal muxaka, it's not the physical. If sometimes the physical muxaka is the way. Right, but even Moshe Mechera is a legal concept. Right?
Yeah.
The physical of tfisa often gives rise to a legal tfisa, a legal muxakas. But here I think we'd be interested in the legal muxakas. Right? Like in Cheskas Karko, standing in the land is not relevant. It's whether you have the legal mufsakas. Okay, really, very good. The big picture of the Radvaz is that he thinks lav gufo kanoi, therefore you don't need any kinyan, etc., etc. What I want to bring out, A, is just to tease out some of these more fundamental questions about primary and secondary duties and the nature of contract, but also to show just how far the Radvaz is deep down in his rabbit hole of contract not kinyan, that almost all the arguments he's employing against Maram are arguments that are appealing to Radvazians, not Maramians. Okay? That's what I wanted to tease out of these Radvazes.
Can I share a happy bit of personal news?
Of course.
Okay, thanks. So, first thing for which I'm now a columnist is that Catholic Magazine has permitted me to title my column Yiddish's Zachen, a bi-weekly column about Jewish things. So it's got a Yiddish title, and I'm very happy with that.
Oh, I thought it was going to be like you're no longer in the ICU or something.
No, I'm still in the 10th floor, sorry.
Okay.
But you got the Catholic to publish a column.
Right. The Yiddish Zaken, that sounds great. Okay, so I guess we should stop here, and we'll pick up with this Pischei Tshuva and the Imre Baruch Shai added, which is actually a nice
You are currently the only person in this conference.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
They didn't even wait.
Yeah.
Right. Well, whatever. So we'll.
He doesn't know what to do.
Yes. So we'll pick up with these interesting Pesachei Tshuva and Imrei Baruch that are courtesy of Yoni Zaharos. And COVID Shirin here. So we're actually going to wrap up this discussion next Kavura, and then we're going to move into some general questions about the relationship between Paul and Eved, and then from there we're going to move into Yad Paul, Yad Balabites.
Is Paul okay?
Yeah, he's okay. Pretty concerned.
Yeah.